Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Handoff from Reese. And tried to go back to, I believe Queen was the intended receiver. Gillespie will drive in high off the glass. Missed it. And Juju's there to follow it in. They're going to push it. Boswell straight down the floor. Intercepted by Rice. All alone at the other end is Derrick Queen, who jams it home with both hands. They'll take a three from the outside. Gillespie got it. 43% from long range. He's got 9 for the night. And he runs to the defender. Queen will get the pass, go inside, and he jams it home with both hands. To Illinois, Brad Underwood in the handshake line with the rest of the coaches and the players, and it's all over here in Champaign. Terrapins with a 91-70 thrashing of Illinois.
Yeah, we kind of use that motivation at halftime, you know, just looking back, just not getting complacent, just standing on his lead and keep building on it. We've seen guys on the team getting down on themselves and they felt look kind of defeated. Just, we kind of try to pounce on them and just try to take advantage of that.
Johnny Holiday with the call on Game Heard right here on 105.7 The Fan. Juju Reese and Derrick Queen combined for 52 points and 23 rebounds. And you heard from Juju after game. Friend of the show, Juju Reese.
Yes.
Terps go into Champaign, Illinois and blow out the Fighting Illini, outscoring them by 20 in the second, or excuse me, 18 in the second half to win 91-70 last night.
It's exactly what they needed. And I told you guys last night, I thought this was going to go one of two ways. Either season on the brink, like style where Willard's throwing chairs like Bobby Knight and this thing slipping away from them, or one of the more signature road wins of Willard's regime. And I know that as a program, Illinois is one of the premier teams that they have had success playing against on the road, which, again, is very much a rarity within conference play. And I know that they were without their 7-footer, and obviously they had some other guys battling the flu. But that was a tour de force. And when you're talking about 17 fast break points for the Terps and 3 for the Illini, when you're talking about 62 points in the paint for the Terps and 34 for the home team, when you're talking about 27 points off turnovers for the Terps and 4 for Illinois, that's amazing. I mean, that is, you don't see that happen against top 25 teams at home very often. You dominate those three categories like that.
Not to mention, you out-rebounded them. And I know they're missing their seven-footer,
yes.
but that, they entered last night the second-best rebounding team in the country.
Five more per game than any team in the Big Ten.
In the country. And blowing them out by 21 points, that was their biggest home loss since 2018. And you could tell early on in this basketball game that Maryland was playing with a ton of intensity. Derek Queen, not being lackadaisical at all. He was running the court constantly last night, and they just dominated inside. And it was just so impressive, guys. And defensively, to force all those turnovers, turn it into offense, like you were saying, Jason, the 27 points off turnovers, this wasn't necessarily them consistently doing full court presses. This was their half court defense being really, really effective.
What was amazing to me, and we've talked a lot this year about this team, and we love the two bigs. We love Jacoby Gillespie. Isn't this the first time that their three best players look like their three best players? Like, you had Queen with 25 and 6. You had Juju with 27 and 17. And then Jacoby Gillespie had 15 and 8 and only one turnover. And he was great on Yakishonis, whatever, however you heck say his name, their best player.
Yes.
Terrorized him all night long.
Well, and I think those three were incredibly well interconnected. And the spacing between Juju and Derek Queen, both, now again, it's easier to switch when no one's got to pick up the seven-footer. I get it. But their spacing defensively on being on the same page about who was where, and then the number of passes attempted and completed between each other, I wish I could find that stat. I tried to find that stat. I got to think it happened more in this game than the last three or four games combined, in part because Queen's been in foul trouble and hasn't played as many minutes and has been on the bench a little bit more. But those two had such a great feel for they playing the high-low game between one another, passing the ball between each other. And look, Derek Queen, whether he hit a wall or just needed to recalibrate or maybe just needed to understand that he can't fight the officials as much as he was or what have you. We talked about, you know, that metric, the BPM and how, you know, his efficiency had been off, and this game he had a BPM of 20.2. Gillespie was at 16. Juju was 15.2. But I mean, a BPM over 20 is unbelievable. And this kid had been coming in with -5 and -14 lately.
This type of performance, especially with Queen and Reese, is what we dreamed on heading into the year. That was the first game in which that duo scored double digits in the first half. Reese had 16, Queen had 13. And another aspect of this game that I really liked, guys, where we were all texting each other last night when it hit halftime and their lead was only 3, and you're thinking, oh man, like, they should be up by more. They're out dominating in the paint. They're getting all of their points in the paint, 34 of the 38 points in the paint. And then in the second half, even though this finished as a 21-point win, I mean, there was a point where Illinois was trailing by 4 with under 12 minutes to go in this game. They were able to fight through that. Every time Illinois ended up making a little bit of a run where you thought they were getting back in it, Maryland answered back, and then they were able to cruise in the final 5, 6, 7 minutes.
Basketball's always a game of runs, and it goes back and forth. It is interesting, though, like the Ravens. The Terps dominated the boards in the first half, but then in like the last 4 minutes, they couldn't get a rebound. Like Illinois was starting to get second-chance points, and it was very frustrating because you're like, well, how is this happening? But they were able to settle it down. Even settled it down after that Selton Miguel, I put in quotes, flagrant foul, where he was trying to stop the play because of an injured player, and they end up giving him a flagrant for the hug, and you're like, oh, this could be a turning point here, and it didn't turn out to be.
No, it didn't. And look, if we're going to nitpick a 20-point road win, they didn't get much from the bench.
No, and Geronimo didn't play at all. Two bench points.
You know, there is that, and you're going, you know, that's one where you win that comfortably. You kind of would think certain guys maybe got off their feet a little more. But then again, the way this team just handled a 9-point lead in the final 5 minutes at home, you can understand Willard riding his horses until he was sure that this thing was completely over.
Yeah, I'm not going to nitpick any road wins with this basketball team, much less a 21-point win over a ranked opponent, but They've had Illinois' number, man.
It's weird.
You go back over the last six seasons, Maryland, with how bad they've been on the road, they're 4-1 in the last five games at Illinois, which is crazy for this team.
Yeah, it's for all the struggles they've had in the Big Ten, that's the one team that they don't seem to struggle. It doesn't matter.
Last year.
Yeah, Illinois's been good, and they still go in there and win games. Now, again,
Illinois also won at College Park a little more than maybe some of these other teams.
But I can remember a game at home against Illinois where they won, and Illinois was good. They had Coleman Hawkins, who eventually transferred to Kansas State. Like, Dave, it's weird that Brad Underwood has trouble beating Maryland. I think, what'd you say?
Three and eight.
Yeah, three and eight against Maryland, the coach of Illinois.
Well, they've won in Indiana, too, right? Relatively recently. So.
Well, I'll take a win streak.
How about a
road win streak?
Road win streak could be nice.
Huh? How about we let that happen?
Well,
maybe you could play a little looser against Wisconsin, not have to worry about as much about that one maybe at home. Maybe that doesn't feel as much of a must win. I don't know if you guys stayed for the post game at all. They brought in their bracketologist on, the FS1 guy.
Yeah, Mike DeCourcy?
DeCourcy, yeah. I mean, he really was kind of... This was a big win for the Terps, like in terms for him, in terms of seeding and even just getting in. Like, basically, he's like, nobody improved themselves more in the last like 2 weeks in college basketball with one win than Maryland finally getting this caliber of a win. And then especially with it being on the road.
Jason, that was their first quad one win on the season. That they needed that.
Huge Friday show, guest-wise. It's a Friday, so we'll get our best bets with our friend Ariel Epstein, plus Betway Ben has his best bets. 3:30, we'll talk NFL football, probably more AFC North than elsewhere, but Aditi Kinkabala from CBS Sports joins us at 3:30. We'll talk some Orioles. Our buddy Mike Bordick, he's part of our Baltimore Baseball Tonight crew, joins us at 4, and then at 5 o'clock. We got sunshine. The sun will be going down, but we'll have sunshine in studio. Jimmy Patsos for a half hour at 5.
It's huge. I'm not sure if Frankie the Wonder Pup will be inside the studio. I hope. I know I say this every time, but I sincerely hope he is. Big night for Coach Patsos last night. I believe he was on the call for Towson and NC A&T. Big win for the Tigers. They're now 6-1 in the CAA. Nice game from Jonathan Lamoth.
Oh, former Terp.
Yeah, he had a nice game for North Carolina A&T against Towson last night. And then obviously a huge win for the Terps. UMBC had a big win last night.
Good night, local.
Maryland women are, obviously I know they lost to Texas, but I mean they run a gauntlet, but they're off to a great start. So, yeah, a lot of good stuff going on around here.
Coming up next, we'll continue the Terps talk. Kevin Willard, he spoke after the game. We'll hear from him next.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here on the Fan.
We knew they were down the big kid, and it was like, all right, they're going to put a freshman out there.
they just don't even think about shooting threes. Like, just throw it in, throw it in, throw it in. Don't shoot threes. You know, their defense forces you to take pull-up jumpers. And so I said, you know, we're going to run a lot of empty side pick and rolls. We're going to hit our big guys. And you guys aren't going to shoot jumpers. You guys are going to just go at these young big kids. And, you know, I really give Jacoby and the guards credit, because sometimes, it could be a little boring to come off a pick and roll and dump it. But, you know, we've been knocking on the door, Chris. We've been knocking on the door. And I'm happy for that group, because it's a good road win.
It's Kevin Willard after the game, and he told the guys to focus on the paint. Man, did they ever. What, they have 62 points in the paint last night? They beat
crazy.
They beat Illinois.
Almost twice as many points in the paint as the alumni.
Yeah, 91-70 win at Illinois.
Well, 64 points in the paint, and the other team's got 70 total points.
Yes.
That's crazy.
They didn't hit a three in the first half.
0-for-3. They only took three.
Well, they listened to him, and I'm glad. Look, there have been times with this team and with this coach where we can even go back to some of Derek Queen's recent struggles, and they're playing better with Geronimo on the court, and it's a tight game. Just leave Geronimo on the court, right? But you want, and I get it. This kid's got a lot of talent. You want to constantly build him up. But sometimes you just got to fight the fight that's going to let you win in the moment. And that's what this was about. This was about their seven-footers not playing. Okay. Their other bigs can't compete with ours. We've got an unbelievable advantage down there. We're just going to keep leaning into that and see if they can do anything about it. They couldn't do anything about it.
You mentioned how Julian and Queen were really working off each other.
Interconnected.
And passing the ball really well. But I also like that Kevin Willard gave a shout-out to Gillespie, where mm-hmm. he had 8 assists last night, guys. And you've seen the assist.
And only one turnover.
Yeah, exactly. You've seen the assist really uptick in the last handful of games, too.
More from Kevin Willard. What did he say to the team? Remember, they're only up 3 at the half. What did he say before the huge second half?
I think the biggest thing we talked about at halftime was really we just talked, I said, guys, we're in a great position. This is where we are. This is what we've done all year. Let's clean up what, you know, we were really getting burnt on, you know, they were running a lot of switches, slip screens to try to get Kobe into switches. And I said, let's just clean up that stuff. And I said, just keep pounding it inside. I said, eventually we're going to knock some threes down. Eventually we'll get on the break and get something easy. I said, but we just got to stay the course. Like, you know, like no one sit there and be like, oh, we're only up 3. I said, and you know, I think Derek said it to me. He said, you know, that's coach, we've been up 3.
Yeah, they were only up 3 after it seemed like they dominated most of the first half. But, man, oh, man, they started to get it rolling in the second half and then just ran away.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of things that Derek Queen did really well in this game. But, I mean, when they are running, his ability to throw the long ball, like to hit someone in stride from 30, 40 feet away, his passing on the run, that is not freshman like at all. I mean, he had some deliveries last night that I just was like, holy bleep, cussing on the couch. Like, now in the half court, again, will he whip one baseline to baseline that ends
I love
up
that.
That almost hits somebody in the face on the bench somewhere? Yeah, that's in there too. But when he's able to play free and easy with pace, how about the way he brought the ball up court a bunch of times last night?
A lot.
I mean, you don't see teams trust a freshman to do that on the road at Illinois against their guards.
And the patience he showed before the game got completely out of control and Illinois pressing, he would be part of the break press. And,
yes.
And the patience he would show and then get the pass to the right guy.
And it's not like he's uncomfortable on the dribble. Like, he sells it enough to draw somebody to him to then make that great pass. And now we've got, you know, 3-on-2 or 2-on-1 the other way.
He just seemed like a man on a mission
last night.
And I'm sure that he was probably hearing some of the talk. Oh, he's hitting the wall.
I think he was hearing it in his own locker room.
Oh, for sure. What's going on with Derek Queen? You saw from the jump the effort that he was putting in, how dialed in he was. There was the and-one late in the game where the crowd was starting to file out at that point. Him screaming, it kind of reminded me of Bruno Fernando at that time, really into the game.
More from Kevin Willard. Juju Reese, 27-17. Why has Juju had so much success against Illinois?
It's a great environment. Yeah, they play single coverage, and so it's
right, no double down.
Yeah, no doubles. You know, Nebraska, he sees a whole loaded up defense. You know, so this is really the way they play. It's like the only team that really plays him single coverage. And I think the guys, again, I thought the guards did a really good job of just understanding, like, hey, let's just keep staying patient and keep pounding it inside, because it's going to wear them out. It's going to make them defend a little bit. It'll get them antsy on the offensive end, which I think it did.
27 points, career high. 17 rebounds, career high. Does it in the same game.
He's been absolutely marvelous here for 2 or 3 weeks now, at a time where a lot of these kids have whatever it is, if it's hitting the wall or just they're not built for this just yet, or they've got to figure it out, or they've got to see it for the first time, right? He's been there, done that, seen all that. I know he only took 3 foul shots in this game, which is kind of crazy when he scores 27, but he now, like, he looks outwardly confident at the line. Like, he's at the point now where if he doesn't make every foul shot he takes, he's pissed at himself. Whereas previously, it's like if he made one, it's like, whoo, all right, well, at least I'm not going to miss them both. Like, everything about his presentation at the foul line looks completely different.
I thought when we were there for the UCLA game and we had David Cox on and we talked to him about Julian Reese, and he really gushed about the maturity that Julian has showed his senior year, being more of a leader, having more of a level head, and he was massive for them last night. And 17 rebounds, but 7 offensive yes. rebounds. Illinois had 8 offensive rebounds as a team last night. To get the 7 offensive rebounds, massive.
It is kind of crazy for all they did and how much they pounded the ball in the paint. Juju and Queen combined for 10 foul shots.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, imagine like what this could have been if they each got to the line 3 or 4 more times. We could be talking about a 30 and 25 party.
One more from Kevin Willard, and he talks about how the starting five has played over the last 5 games.
That starting five, for the most part, has been really, really good. You know, I thought Jacoby was great again. You know, I talked to Rodney about 2 minutes ago in the game. I said, Rod, you're plus 25. I said, I know you haven't scored the basketball. I said, but your value on the court, I said, you're doing great things defensively. I think they have to guard you. They're not leaving you in the corners. You're opening up the court for everybody. I said, sometimes you got to realize that at your young age in your career, sometimes you're having a great effect on the game, and that's what you got to focus on. And I thought Selton and Rodney, even though they didn't have a huge impact on the game, I thought they were stellar.
So he makes a good point about Rodney, and it's one that Beltway Ben made
prior to the show in
the kitchen. Like, Rodney Rice was playing really good defense. He missed a couple wide open looks early, missed a chippy on a beautiful pass from Queen, but got his later offensively, but it was the defensive end where he shined.
Yeah, he was another one where there were 2 or 3 times where I think he got lost in the wash on a switch, and they got a couple of backdoor layups where I think he was caught in no man's land. But again, that's a really difficult assignment that they had against that backcourt last night. I think it's a game that he can grow on. And look, they didn't need it yesterday because it got sideways. But he's the kind of kid who has to keep shooting the ball. They don't have that many 3-point shooters. Like, even if it's like, there's going to be times where you've got that good look. I'm not saying force it, but the fact that the one dropped from NBA land, finally.
Shot clock,
Yeah, and he had to put it up because it was expiring. But I think he can even grow from that and learn from that. Like, he's going to be somebody, if they're going to go anywhere in March, he's going to have to be hitting some shots from the perimeter.
Beltway Ben, any thoughts?
Yeah, last night was the first time in a few weeks where I really had a lot of fun watching the Terps. Right at the UCLA game, we were there, it was fun. But last night, they just start to finish looked as good of a team as it could be. And they were determined, right? Like, getting the ball inside, there's been matchups where Julian Reese, we've said, can take this game over. And either they don't go to him or he doesn't look aggressive. From start to finish, the plan was obvious watching the game. We knew what they were going to do. And then Willard says in the postgame, I told them, don't shoot threes, get the ball inside. And they did it, start to finish. I talked to you guys a little bit about this off air, and you don't want to get too ahead, but Indiana, the typical Terps thing at the end of the Turgeon era and early in Willard's era is to go to Indiana and lose by 12 to 13 points and really never have a shot in the game, right? Maybe be up early, but to go lose in a big way to Indiana. If they can go to Indiana and win, looking at the rest of the schedule, they can continue to really, really build the resume and be a top 4 seed in the Big Ten tournament, which we've been waiting on for a few years. So build off of that win against Illinois. It was an incredible win, fun win to watch. But beating Indiana now has to be a realistic, you know, expectation for this team.
Terps in Indiana, noon on Sunday.
Stacking them.
Yeah.
Stack those wins.
Harbs likes to say stack them. That pregame coverage starts at 11 right here on 105.7 The Fan. When we come back, we switch to football. And Lamar Jackson looks like he's going to win his third MVP this season, but he has not made the final goal of a Super Bowl. But what does the future hold for one Lamar Demetrius Jackson? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.
I can say there's no player I'd rather have on my team than Lamar Jackson. He's the best quarterback in the league. So that's my answer to that question.
Eric DaCosta, end of year press conference the other day, saying he'd rather have Lamar Jackson than anybody. And in the regular season, that does check out. Lamar Jackson looks like he's first team all pro again. He looks like he's going to win his third MVP. He set a career high in yards, a career high in touchdowns, a career low in interceptions, a career high in passer rating. So it looks like he's going to have Todd Monken back. Mm-hmm. As the tea leaves, I don't think Todd Monken's going to Dallas or New Orleans.
Nope.
So what does, and we'll get to more Monk coming up at the bottom of the hour, but what does the future look like for Lamar Jackson?
I mean, I'm already fascinated with where this continues to evolve. Now, look, I don't know that he's going to put up the same numbers as last year. Like, it just, when things happen once in the history of the NFL, it's hard to think they're going to happen two straight years. There's a lot of variables at play here. It's the ultimate team sport. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of people who, when Patrick Mahomes threw for 50 touchdowns his first full year as a starter, were like, well, man, what's he going to be like?
Yeah.
By year five, is he going to throw for 55 or 60? Yeah, no, he hasn't done it again, and it might be a long time till anybody does it. So there's that. But that doesn't mean that he can't keep growing in his overall game. Not all of it's going to be measured by, you know, yards per attempt and touchdowns and that stuff. I think he's someone who can continue to elevate his postseason play. I think he's someone who can continue to become even more of a vocal leader and maybe even more demonstrative when necessary on the field and on the sidelines. And look, could he become a better deep ball passer still? Yeah, he could. I mean, I feel like it was more early in the year than late in the year, the tendency to overthrow the deep ball, a little too much air in it. Can they have, you know, multiple? So this year, things improved, and we broke down the numbers at various times. It really improved with Bateman. It was still kind of hit or miss with Flowers. Andrews isn't stretching the field as much as he used to. Likely's often playing second fiddle to Andrews. And it really got exponentially better with Bateman. But can there be games moving forward where Lamar is connecting on 30-yard passes to multiple targets? I mean, we're really, you're getting down pretty in the weeds when you're talking about a kid who just turned 28 who's done what he's done.
When you're talking about Lamar Jackson coming off a year in which he had, we're talking about improvements on the margins. There aren't glaring weaknesses in his game anymore. There just isn't. Now, I'm not going to say that he can improve upon some of those, you know, lesser attributes of his game, but to expect him to have the year that he had in 2024 and 2025, I just don't think is realistic.
Well, how about I just expect him to be great? Like, isn't that fair? Because that's
he does that. Yeah, I mean, he's done that since he took over and faced the Cincinnati Bengals when they're 4-5 and the season's on the line. He's never been not great.
I think maybe one, and we're nitpicking with all of this, but a conversation that was brought up multiple times throughout the season, maybe having a better ability to discern whether to take off and run if the open space is.
I thought about breaking that up, but it's such a long season and it's so about being healthy in the playoffs that I thought back on that one and was like, we're probably the ones who get too caught up in the moment thinking, why didn't you run more against the Buffalo XYZ. Bills in late September when it's still the Buffalo Bills in late September. It's not a team in the division. You're still, you know, you want to be in position to win the division to get at least one home playoff game. And that's not saying that you're not going all out to win games, but I almost feel like he's at a point where he really understands the ebbs and flows with that and knows how to manage himself through the season, probably even more than we would like as people who aren't absorbing those hits in real time would say, just run, just default to that. I think he's become so adept at a passer in any situation, red zone, first down, second down, third down, fourth down, big plays, horizontal plays, check downs. Like, I feel like he knows best on that.
Yeah, I also think, and we were shocked about the lack of his running in that game Sunday, and that's fair. But
right,
then,
playoffs are a different story.
Yeah, but the other side of that is he led an offense that had over 400 yards of offense, and they had three turnovers to shorten drives. Like they could, if they don't turn the ball over, they might add 500
yards.
Yeah, so like on one side, I'm like, yeah, where was that? But on the other side, they're moving up and down the field in the second half when they weren't turning the ball over, except for the one Andrews.
Yeah, I mean, I think because that defense was doing certain things and selling out in certain ways, I think they did themselves a great disservice by not at least seeing what some design Lamar runs could look like, even if it just became a keep the defense on the field, wear them out, time of possession thing. And it's not even showing up so much in the yardage as it's just one or two explosive plays that now force that defense to react to it, that get them out of some of what they were doing. I think that's a way they could have dictated to the defense. And to me, they got caught off guard by the defense. They were too late to react to it. And then when they reacted a certain way, they didn't stick with it enough. And then there's certain things in their bag that they never got to that they should have quickly, like Lamar and Justice Hill in the mesh point.
Ultimately, though, looking at next year and beyond, he just had such a great consistency this year.
Yes.
Where he only had one bad game, and that was the first game against the Steelers. He just, that type of consistency, that was maybe a knock on him in years prior. He just improved so much this year, so much, where it's all on the margins moving forward.
And the other thing is we saw great Lamar in the playoffs. The first game he was great.
Yep.
And the second game, okay, so Bateman runs the wrong route and he maybe should have looked the safety off a little longer. And then he tried to do too much on the fumble. But he was freaking exceptional in the second half, which we had never seen in years past. And he probably would allow that whole thing to snowball. And he'd been awful in the second half in the past, to the point where he leads them on the drive that was potentially going to send the game to overtime if they just catch the two-point conversion.
Look, it wasn't a great offensive line, okay? It was a good offensive line that he made perform great enough. It was Bateman's first breakout year. It was only Zay's second year in the league. Like, he's at the point where he makes everything around him better. Like that, and that to me is the sign of the truly best 3, 4, 5 quarterbacks in the league. You look at that cast and you're like, man, those guys are all good. But what did you think of those guys before they were with somebody like this? Or what would their plane have been elsewhere? It's kind of like the Jaden Daniels effect in Washington right now. Like, Scary Terry's a player, but anybody who wanted Zach Ertz could have had Zach Ertz. Anybody who wanted Zacharias as their backup slot guy could have had Zacharias as coming in their backups. Anybody who wanted Austin Eckler for $2 million a year could have had Austin Eckler for $2 million a year. Like, it's the quarterback.
The perfect point for that was his final drive of the year, in which no Zay Flowers, no Rashad Bateman. He went right through that Bills defense, scored a touchdown, and had his team in position to tie up the game.
Well, and a year ago, these guys thought, eh, we'll let both our guards walk. Who cares? And we'll run Ronnie Stanley back after we took him to the cleaners, right? And we'll start a rookie at right tackle, and we'll end up playing our sixth guy, McCary, every snap, and we'll be fine. Same thing now, right? We think they're letting the left tackle walk. We think they're willing to find out if the right tackle can play left tackle. Like, we think they'll give a job to Voorhees next year. Like, and they'll probably be, it'll all probably work out. Why? Because of Lamar Jackson.
Ravens done. By the way, AFC and NFC championship game, championship games, you can hear them right here on 105.7 The Fan, Westwood One's coverage after Terps basketball on Sunday.
I don't know if the games will be as good as the promo.
No, the promo's really good.
Yeah.
Coming up next, Todd Monken. We alluded to him earlier this past segment. Looks like Monk's going to be back. How about this offense and how does it evolve in year three? That's next here on The Fan. Ravens had their end of the season press conference a couple days back, and one of the things that was discussed, John Harbaugh was asked about Todd Monken and the offense.
Yes, there is. And, you know, don't underrate experience, right? You know, there are no new ideas in football. There are new iterations, new ways they're organized, new ways they're applied, great ways they're taught or not taught, creating a vision for your team, getting everybody on the same page so they can execute and operate together, making the best use of your ability and your talent. But the challenge for our coach that's been around over the years is the ability to get out in front and stay ahead of the fact that it's always moving, and you got to keep moving, you got to keep staying ahead of what people are doing. You know, there's split safety coverages changed over the last 3 years, and people caught up with them this year again. So what's our next iteration of that going to be across the league? This is always an ever-moving kind of a game, a chess game, but it's a higher level than chess. There's more to it. And Todd's one of those guys that can apply his experience along with the fact that he's always thinking ahead. He's always trying to come up with the next idea. And then he's also very much a collaborator. You know, you've got T and George Godsey and George Warhop and Travis Schweitzer and Greg Lewis and Willie Taggart. Those guys all bringing all these ideas to the table, and those guys working together. To me, sometimes a young coach does a good job of that. Sometimes an experienced guy understands the value of that and is able to utilize his people really well around him. And it's the guys that last. Those are the guys that kind of prove themselves over time, I think, and Todd's one of those guys.
Later in the presser, Harbs did go on the record saying he wanted Todd Monken back, and it does seem to look like Todd Monken will be back, as only two jobs remain, and that's New Orleans and Dallas, and he hasn't been connected to either of those. So you heard what Harbs had to say, Jason. What do you think this offense, how does it evolve in year three? And more monkey business.
Well, I guess I go back to, you want to be able to do everything, and they can, and they already are so multiple. I wonder if there is an element of, what is that? I'm trying to think of that sort of old slogan. Something of all trades,
Jack of all trades, master of none. Yeah.
Does that become where they get themselves in trouble? And not maybe even drilling down more on our identity against certain teams, certain defenses, certain fronts needs to be blank. And maybe we need to have a better feel for how we adjust out of it or how we react. Like, I feel like sometimes he has so much stuff he thinks that's going to work, he just kind of starts unloading it. And sometimes we see Derrick Henry when I'm thinking this is Justice Hill time, and sometimes it's Justice Hill when I'm like, just stick with Derrick Henry. It's working. I get what you're doing. I know you think this other stuff would work too. Can they be a prisoner of their own success? When I went out there a couple weeks ago and I talked to him and I talked to Ronnie Stanley and we talked about a balanced offense and what it means to be balanced. And he made a great point. You know, he told the team, Monken did years ago, and Ronnie Stanley told me, balanced isn't 50% run, 50% pass. Balance is the ability to attack any quadrant of field with any player at any moment in time. But can you do that in the playoffs? Are you going to be able to do that time and time again against the best of the best? And at times, do you have to maybe just keep it a little simpler, stupid for longer periods of these games? Does that make sense? Am I making any sense?
Sure. I think it makes sense, but I almost think we're sort of having the same conversation that we just had prior to the break about Lamar, where these are more tweaks. They did phenomenal things last year, averaging almost 7 yards per play, scoring in the red zone, scoring touchdowns in the red zone 74% of the time, second in the NFL and third. Like, they did so many great things for the vast majority of last year. It's more about the fine-tuning.
I'm saying when it comes down to a one-game season, sure. a one-series season,
but even in that game, like you said, they averaged, seven points?
They did.
If they play a clean football game, they're playing Sunday.
Yep.
I don't even think that's not even debatable. Like, if they don't turn the ball over, they probably have 500 yards of offense, and they're playing. They're getting ready for Kansas City.
And that's where it makes it even more puzzling, Ken, is they had the fewest amount of turnovers in franchise history this year. So it's not even like turnovers was an issue on the season. It was that day, of course.
It is fascinating to see them, and they cleaned it up in the second half, and obviously the Andrews turnover notwithstanding, but to see the two turnovers in the first half, when Lamar especially has been so clean this season, and it's like, I know for some fans it's a here we go again, but then I would go back to the, he never did what he did in the second half of that game in the playoffs before. I think this is different.
Yeah. He's at a different place. They're at a different place. But look, is Derrick Henry going to run for 2,000 yards next year? And right? And is he going to give you 300-some clean carries over the course of, what did he play? They played all 19 games. So will there be natural evolution that has to happen there? And will there be even more thrust upon
healthy
the
Keaton
passing
Mitchell.
Game?
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking, Mitchell, I didn't want to keep changing. Mitchell.
Lamar Jackson. Yeah. I mean, Lamar... Will there be even more volume in the pass game? Will he be even more judicious with his legs? Which means instead of 4,100-something passing yards, 4,700. I don't know. Even with Derrick Henry still being a factor. Is he throwing for over 4,500 yards next year?
It is incredible. I was looking at this. He basically made a 500-yard jump this year.
Yeah.
Like, so is there potentially room for another few hundred yard jump
next
year?
I don't think the running back's going for 2K next year.
No, probably not. I wouldn't bet against 1,500.
Right, but then that's a 500. Sure. That's 500. Sure. And then maybe Mitchell picks up a little here. But like, I also think, you know, how many times did Lamar have a deep guy this year and he just overthrew? Like, again, that's one. Like, if that gets even a little bit, a smidge more efficient.
Coming up next, it's a Friday, and what would a Friday be without our best friend, our best bet with our friend Ariel Epstein, and also our
Ben's
best friend.
Our best friend.
He is our betting friend.
Our betting friend.
Beltway Ben, he's got his best bets next as well.